Okay, it's recording now. So this is a recording for the Hidden Histories project made on the 21st of June. I'm Anne Welsh and I'm interviewing Ray Siemens. Just looking at that. So we've gone through the data consent form, so we'll just plunge straight on into the interview, if that's okay. And it's a nice, easy question to start with, and you can talk for as long as you would like. So it's really just, how did you first get involved in what we now think of as digital humanities?
Oh, you said easy. No, that's a great question. And as people talk more and more about what digital humanities is, whatever it may be, but as people think about it, I think understanding how one got to whatever it is really important. For me, I was a video gamer in high school and had the fortune of being in a course with friends where we wrote our own video games.
Yeah.
And so 10 years ago, before we started talking about video gaming and gaming culture being associated with DH, I wouldn't have gone back that far, but because that's now a part of what we consider DH to be, or in an area that DH services and is served by, it seems appropriate to go there. And so I started programming games with my friends in high school. And when I got to university, I'm mid-40s now, and so universities, when I got there in the mid-80s, were just beginning to introduce computing curriculum and humanities and arts and basic familiarity courses with first-generation Macs and so on. There were courses to take that nicely flowed from the gaming in high school into a more university-oriented curriculum around this. And then I had the good fortune of going to University of Waterloo, where that was not only part of the curriculum, but even in their English department, which I was in doing my undergraduate, they had association with computer science. They had a co-op program where people went into computational environments for work terms when they weren't in their academic terms. And that was the foundation for a movement forward, always with a couple of very strong, positive academic mentors. My undergraduate advisor at Waterloo was someone who was really involved in this and well-connected. While I was there, they hired a gaming professor, specifically a gaming professor who was teaching courses in the mid-80s on computer games as narrative.
And this is within English?
This is in an English department. I then went on to do graduate work at a number of places, all of which had fledgling programs in digital humanities, called then humanities computing or computational literary studies and things like that. But it seemed to me that I was always arriving just a year or two after something really interesting had happened at all the institutions that I was at. So there was something that we would now call digital humanities going on, something very strong. And I had the pleasure of working with people in addition to Waterloo at University of Alberta, University of Toronto, Oxford, University of British Columbia, always finding really interesting and engaged people who were starting things in what we now know as digital humanities. So I really feel that I got my start because of being engaged with these very engaged people as they were pioneers in the field. So it's in fact been a real pleasure, and I recognize not everyone's trajectory is like that, but I feel privileged to have had that good fortune. There's nothing planned, you know. An undergraduate doesn't necessarily think that they are going to be doing this sort of thing. You go with what seems right, you go with where opportunities are, you go with what's interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm just really fortunate that there were always these interesting things to do.
Yeah.
And all pointing in a direction that we now call digital humanities, but really wasn't called that at the time.
But that's really cool, because in a way, do you think it would be fair to describe yourself as maybe the first generation who is educated within computing and the humanities? The people who were educating you had built those programs, having had to learn in different ways perhaps, and then they've made a formal structure, or brought it into a formal structure, and you were the first generation for your university that was benefiting.
That's a really
from that.
Good point. Yes, right. So the people who I consider to be the big academic pioneers in the field were those who were setting up the programs that I had the good fortune of taking, always in, you know, the first or so year of its operation.
Yeah.
So absolutely. So I think generationally speaking, that would make me in that position you've suggested.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. And for another strand of our project, we're researching who were the pioneers. So we'll ask you off tape to name names for that. But that is really, really interesting. I mean, a couple of names that we would like you to name, if you're happy to do so, because it's entirely positive, is who are the people that you feel really influenced you when you were getting to the research stage and thinking about where what we now think of as the Ray Siemens research profile was starting to come together. You know, who were the people that you thought, wow, that's really cool, I'm going to follow in their footsteps?
Well, I'll just list pretty much chronologically the people I had the pleasure of working with over time, and that couldn't help but be a list also of those who were very influential on me.
Cool.
So in my undergraduate, I had Phil Smith, who had then come from Harvard to University of Waterloo to do arts computing, and Paul Beam, Neil Randall as well, who was our hire in gaming at that point. I went on then to work with people like Stephen Reimer and David Mile at University of Alberta. Mm-hmm. Went on then to spend time with Ian Lancashire and many of his colleagues, Russ Wooldridge and others, at that powerhouse where Willard McCarty was as well at University of Toronto, the Centre for Computing and Humanities. Went from there between a couple different institutions, including Oxford, where I got to know Lou Bernard and the folks at OUCS, and University of British Columbia, where I ultimately completed my degree, working with a number of digital humanists there, but ultimately the brother of one of the key figures in digital humanities, often unsung. I worked with Paul Stanwood, a Renaissance literary English professor. His brother was the person who, at the IBM Research Labs, developed the first keyword and context dynamic index, and then gave it back to our community in the 1950s. So just post-Bouja, pre-everything exploding in the 60s, and then with explosions afterwards. So I worked with someone whose brother was at the center of that, and so he quite naturally understood what I wanted to do with literary studies and computation. But you folks know yourselves, this is a field where we all work together well, we all mentor each other in various ways, almost all of them positive. And there have been many, many other wonderful people I've had the pleasure of working with in various ways, because we do a lot of work together. Mm-hmm. And that list would be much, much longer than those with whom I formally was in course with and studied under and so on.
Yeah, exactly. So in terms of kind of forming your own ideas, you know, do you have any jumping off points that you can really pinpoint, going thinking way back to when you were faced with your first putting in, maybe for your first grant proposal? Might be a good recollection to pin down.
Gosh, that'll be difficult for me, but I'll start talking, and if it gets really strange, just wipe this part from the tape. the reason being, because remember, this is a field that never really was a field per se, and has never really been a field, may not even be a field. Rather, it's a combination, a confluence of many, many interesting things. Now, Willard says digital humanities and humanities computing sit at the intersection of computational method and humanities endeavor. Mm-hmm. Computational method is very vague, and deliberately so. Humanities endeavor, that's very vague. It's all changing, and so the intersection point is always changing too. Mm-hmm. If there was a eureka moment for me, it was that I could use a number of means beyond straightforward close reading. Mm-hmm. So this is very early on in my university education. I could use many means beyond close reading to help understand the literature that I was engaging. And that's a very vague and dull eureka moment, but there it was, and I was working with people who were at the forefront of that, and that made it very exciting. That type of approach became one of many in my toolkit for literary studies, and then being involved in, I'll still go back to my undergraduate degree here, being involved also in a number of fairly significant computational moments was, I think, important as well. For example, one of my work terms was with IBM in Toronto. I was at Waterloo, which is very close to Toronto, and I was doing documentation in their lab. And they gave me this big pile of books and said, okay, it's your job to revise these. I said, well, what is this? And they said, oh, it's Telecommunication Protocol, Internet Protocol. And I said, what's that? I say, well, we call it the Internet for short. I said, oh, well, that sounds good. And then that was my job, was to revise the manual for the thing that would blow wide open. This was 1986. By 1989, boom, we had something very, very big there, theorized and in practice, and then we very soon had everything that led to the web as we know it now. But, you know, purely by chance, I show up in Toronto, I'm giving the stack of manuals that's the foundation for this all, from the IBM perspective, to revise. So how could I not learn something as part of that process and see, given the way things have gone since, as being instrumental? But I would say it's more a matter of small moments, cumulatively, as things come together in a field that's very dynamic, dynamic in its own evolution. And perhaps given that, it's understanding. The eureka moment could be understanding that digital humanities is as much a process. Mm-hmm. In fact, is more a process than any fixed one thing or another. Yeah. Not all fields are like that. I think that makes digital humanities really exciting. Mm-hmm. You may know my other field is early Tudor Renaissance English literature, which is very exciting and dynamic too, but it's very different.
Yeah.
Very different.
Definitely. Yeah, I started off this, I read literature at St. Andrews, which is very much the old style.
Yes.
Way of doing things and form of course. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I know exactly what you mean, dynamic, but in a completely, completely different way.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, the field in general, you know, you said, is it a field, is it not a field? You know, what did you think of it as a field at the time, or did you see yourself as doing literary stuff and the computery stuff just ran alongside it?
Well, I know originally I wondered how to bring the two together.
Okay.
You know, so even as a high school student, playing computer games, you know, I like doing that more than doing some other things. I thought, how can I bring this and things like it into what I'm doing? And so, you know, maybe I began as a hobbyist on that side, and my focus then as an undergrad was more literary. Mm-hmm. But I was at a place where there wasn't a fine line, or even a heavy line, not even a dotted line drawn between the two. In English department, I was taking courses about computer gaming. I was taking courses about computer-assisted learning of various kinds. I was taking courses that we would now call digital humanities courses. It wasn't until grad school that I found I was separating things out more. And so during my master's degree, what I began to realize with the help of all the wonderful people I worked with was that we were really separating content from method. And that, I think, is a pretty standard observation these days. And I was happy to have had it in graduate school doing my master's degree in the late 80s, early 90s, 89 to 91. So that was a moment where it was all separated out. Mm-hmm. Lately, though, my mind is it's coming back together. And again, DH methods and tools are among many that one uses, I think, for any type of endeavor, academic in the area. And I think that's a really good thing. It's nice to have a DH conference, which is dedicated to maybe not DH as a field, but DH as a confluence of fields, where we can understand methodology both connected with and divorced from, for academic and intellectual purposes, from the content areas. I think it's also really important that those methods have a home, whatever they may be, and I think DH has a great role in bringing those homes together, too. I think there's a lot of good that can be done through that approach.
Yeah.
I haven't answered your question, though, have I?
No, you have, and they're more nudges than questions, really.
So. Okay.
No, it's good. We've got some interesting data. Thinking back again, how do you think, I mean, do you think you were quite typical when you first sort of met people from different universities and different cultures? Did you find that your experience for your generation was quite typical, or did you feel that other people had different courses that were different, you know, courses in the sense of courses through their life that were different from yours? I mean, do you think that your experience as an academic forming was typical for the era? Hard to say, it's impressionistic.
I had always assumed that there was nothing unique about what I was doing, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. But whether it was typical, I knew it was a bit different. And a bit different because, let's say, when I was asked to read Paradise Lost in its entirety for the first time, which was pure joy, by the way, not everyone feels that, so I feel it's important to underline it. It's a very long poem. My first engagement, before I sat down and read it, I read it through straight as best I could, was to begin to use text analysis computing tools, TACT from U of T, to give me a sense of things that close reading might uncover. At the same time as I did what most people do, you read a quick primer so that you have a sense of the patterns that you will pick up, so they don't seem so foreign when you encounter them. So I was the only one who used TACT in my seminar. Text analysis computing tools. We were all wonderfully tactful. But and at that point I knew that I was different.
Yeah. And how do you think, like, thinking outside academia, how did other people view sort of computers and how they were being used?
My dad was an academic.
Okay.
What I would call an old school academic. An academic of a certain generation which retired about 15 years ago. And when I showed interest in that area, well, this is how I'll approach that, but you can refocus me or ask the question again. When I showed interest in that area, he sat me down, as a father should a son, I think, in maybe those situations. And he basically said, you should take a look at what's rewarded in the system you're about to enter. Take a look at how people do things. And at that point, he pointed out that people who do things with computers often can do more and do more interesting things. And then he listed a number of people that he felt had done some interesting things. And they were some people I knew and some that I didn't know, some that I grew to know. In fact, one of them was his own dissertation advisor from the University of Wisconsin in the late 50s, early 60s, Carl Kroeber, who had done work in this area. Also, I believe, Steve Jones's dissertation advisor, who's not of the same generation as my father. But you know, that was made very clear to me at that point, that there were benefits to consider, and that was done familially, the way one can if you're in an academic family, as I am.
And did you feel at the time that your father was particularly prescient, or was there a kind of buzz around the computer generally, just in the ear, as it were?
Okay, well, my father's passed away, but he would appreciate me throwing this joke in, so I will. He said that his goal for the last bit of his career was to ride out this computer fad. So that was the joke, at the same time as he was giving me the advice, saying, this is not a fad. If you're going to do this, get on board. And I think he was right. So I would say prescient.
Yeah.
A deep thinker who saw what was coming and himself chose not to embrace it, but recognized that others didn't have the same option.
Yeah. Same luxury.
There we go. Yeah.
Yeah, that is really, really interesting. I'm just looking through my checklist to make sure that we've covered everything. Yeah, I mean, I wonder about some of the conferences, because you've talked quite interestingly about, you know, is it a field? Is it not a field?
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder about, you know, what was your first engagement with sort of the conference community as we would see it now, and how did that come about?
Well, so I've been to digital humanities conferences called various things since before I was even in university, tagging along with my father to conferences in high school, because I wanted to see what Boston was like. I grew up in Edmonton, which is a far way, especially if you go back to 20, 30 years ago, a very far way even by air from larger centers where conferences then would take place. And there was a lot going on. It was really exciting. Where I began really starting to focus was in my undergrad, where I had an undergraduate advisor, Paul Bean, who focused very much on what we in our community take for granted today, but other communities still don't. Was he believed if you did the work as a research assistant or an associate, you should be involved in the dissemination of that work and get full credit. And so I went to a number of conferences with him, the SIGDOC group, the documentation group under ACM's special interest group structure. Went to the Society for Teaching and Learning in Higher Education, where a lot of our pedagogical work was being shown off. I went to my first, what was then joint ACH-ALLC conference in Kingston, which was a bit late, because I was actually right next door and with some of the same people in 1989, when I was still in that part of the world around Toronto, where the first joint conference between the two groups, ACH and ALLC, took place. I was at a conference and I didn't even know it, which is, I guess, a positive thing, because I was there with friends, undergraduate friends who were also working with some grad students, who were also then research assistants for many of the people's names in the field who we recognize as being founders today.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe I'll stop there on that sentiment, but I will say one thing that's been very clear, even from that one experience of being in Toronto at a conference I didn't even know I was at, was that I was part of a really good community and a really flexible community structure,
mm-hmm.
that could embrace an undergraduate, that could draw in an undergraduate who's only peripherally involved, because as an undergraduate I was being mentored by graduates,
mm-hmm.
who were more centrally involved, who were being mentored then by their research supervisors, who were much more centrally involved, who were then at a conference that was truly momentous, mm-hmm. I believe, for our discipline, when the two groups came together, and the North Americans and the European groups, not to put two but they have some geographic correlation, each of those groups. That's when we started talking internationally.
Yeah.
And I was there not even knowing it, just knowing the group of people I was with was a group of people I wanted to stay involved with.
Mm-hmm.
That was 89. It's a few years past since.
Yeah, definitely. The one final thing that I think I wanted to pick up, just because you brought it up sort of towards the start, was it struck me when you were talking about doing work at IBM, that there's one of the things, the observations that I would make as someone who's very new to the field, is that looking back to the 80s, there seemed to be more fluidity between academia and you know, industry, if that's if that's a sensible way to put it, because I guess the hardware that was being used was quite specialist, and so there would be perhaps relationships there through a kind of practical route, as opposed to what we now have as industry academic partnerships on a more thematic route. And I wonder, is that, do you think that's an accurate observation, or how was it back then in terms of the whole industry academia?
Well, that was certainly my view then, and I think if you were to talk to some people who've been around maybe 20 years longer than I have, so I'm mid-40s, find someone who's mid-60s, I think you'd get a much better reflection then, but that's certainly my view. And one thing I have noticed is that depending on which specific part of the DH culture you're talking with today, that may have never changed. And I think it's a good thing that we all work together, and I think it's a good thing that the academics and those who are wholly academically focused work with those not only who are alternatively academically focused, those who are involved in training, many ventures, including, you know, what we do at our Summer Institute in Victoria, but also those in industry. One thing I've noticed lately is that there seems to be opportunity and possibility of further opportunity between academia and a number of really good enterprises outside academia, not only university presses, not only Google, but many, many other ventures. And, you know, one of the great postdocs of many great postdocs in my lab has just moved on to join a firm in Victoria. It was a very, very easy lateral movement for her, and that can only exist because we're doing things that ensure that academia and the business community at large understand each other around at least digital humanities, whatever we mean by digital humanities.
Well, look, I think that's a lovely place to stop, really.
All right.
Thank you so much. That's been absolutely brilliant.
It's been a pleasure.
I'll just stop the recorder. Yep.